Hey folks, my name is Tommy Moore. I have a background in exercise and sports science, specializing in nutrition and exercise physiology, and now I'm a mentor here at BioLab. And part of my role is to make sure that students and teachers have access to multiple domains of information. Some of you might like the format of the classroom, however some may prefer the format of a podcast. However you receive your information best, this is just a way to help supplement your learning and perhaps look at it from a slightly different angle. This episode looks at Unit 3 VCE Physical Education, specifically how the body produces energy, looking at fuels required for ATP resynthesis, oxygen demand versus uptake, and the many characteristics associated with the energy systems. The food that we eat contains macronutrients, proteins, carbohydrates, and fat. When digested, these get broken down into amino acids, glucose, and fatty acids, and are involved in metabolic processes that produce adenosine triphosphate, or ATP. ATP is the energy source for every cell in the human body, including our muscles. In order to understand energy systems, we need to understand ATP. It consists of three main structures: the nitrogenous base, adenine, the sugar, ribose, together making an adenosine molecule, and a chain of three phosphoryl groups that bind to the ribose, creating adenosine triphosphate. ATP is a chemical fuel source. The bond between the second and third phosphate is considered a high energy bond. Our body preferentially takes the energy from the bond between the last two phosphate molecules and converts it from chemical energy into physical energy. When we take off a phosphate from ATP, we're going to be left with adenosine diphosphate, or ADP, as well as an inorganic phosphate. To be efficient and economical, ATP must be continually resynthesized or rebuilt so that energy can continue to be provided to the cell. In order for ADP to convert back into ATP, we need to break down phosphocreatine or nutrients. This is where our energy systems come in. Our energy systems are the metabolic processes that are providing energy to our entire body. They work in every cell and are required by our muscles to provide movement. The body requires energy to be in the form of adenosine triphosphate, or ATP. ATP is necessary to convert chemical energy to mechanical energy, or movement. In this episode, I'm going to discuss our three main energy systems. I'm going to look into the duration that they can operate for, the cause of fatigue, metabolic byproducts, process and rate of recovery, and the effect of exercise intensity on fuel selection. Energy systems. They're the ones that drive all of our activity. Every muscle fiber, every neural impulse, every heartbeat, every cell. They're always working, all the time. And there's three of them. The ATPPC system, anaerobic glycolysis, or sometimes called the lactic acid system, and the aerobic energy system. The first two energy systems, ATPPC and lactic acid systems, are anaerobic, meaning that they can generate energy without the presence of oxygen. The third energy system, the aerobic system, generates energy with oxygen. The body draws upon all three systems all the time, regardless if you're sleeping, sprinting, swimming, or daydreaming instead of listening to my voice, each system never completely shutting off. This is what we call energy system interplay. The only thing that differs between activities is the percentage of energy contribution from each system. And this will make sense as I explain how each system works to produce ATP. Before I dive deeper, I'm going to provide some context. The air we breathe is 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, and the remaining 1% is a combination of gases including carbon dioxide, methane, helium, etc. Our body likes oxygen. The cardiorespiratory system, our heart and lungs, work closely with the rest of the body to provide energy, nutrients, and oxygen to all of our trillions and trillions of cells. How do they access all these cells? Through the circulatory system, our wonderful network of blood vessels, arteries, veins, capillaries. Hemoglobin, a protein in our blood, has a strong affinity for oxygen, so it carries this oxygen through all the arteries, veins, and capillaries throughout our body. The aerobic system needs oxygen to generate energy. So how we uptake, transport, and utilize oxygen is very important. If there are limited or scarce amounts, the anaerobic systems will predominate energy production. So the ATP-PC system, as I mentioned earlier, generates energy without the presence of oxygen. It doesn't rely on oxygen to operate, so it has the advantage of a rapid supply of energy, but a disadvantage as there is limited energy supply. Each system has slightly different ways of resynthesizing ATP, but they all need a source of fuel to do this. The source of fuel for the ATP-PC system is in its name. It's the PC part, or phosphocreatine. This system uses the ATP that is immediately available within the cell, but also uses intracellular PC stores to make more ATP. So how does that all work? We know our bodies lack the bond between the second and third phosphate group because it's a high energy bond. So when that gets broken down by an enzyme called ATPase, energy is released. But when we break off a phosphate group from ATP, we are left with ADP and an inorganic phosphate. The ATP-PC system uses the phosphocreatine, or PC, in the cell and reattaches it to the ADP using an enzyme called ATP synthase. When this enzyme reattaches the phosphate to ADP, it makes ATP and creatine. In abbreviation terms, ATP is broken down into ADP and PI, releasing energy. Then this ADP reacts with the PC to get ATP and C. So the metabolic byproducts of this system are the ADP and the inorganic phosphate. Despite the system having a very rapid rate of ATP production, it has a low yield of ATP due to its limited fuel stores. The PC runs out pretty quickly and results in this system to be depleted within about 10 to 12 seconds of a maximal effort. A great sporting example is a 100 meter sprint. It's a short duration, maximal intensity, and lasting about 12 seconds, depending on how quick you are. There simply isn't enough time for oxygen to be inhaled by lungs, extracted by blood, delivered to the muscles, and used to produce energy aerobically. But remembering that all three energy systems are working simultaneously, so some oxygen will be used, but the ATP-PC system will predominate energy production in this scenario. To recover this system, PC stores will need to be replenished. A passive recovery will take 30 seconds to replenish 50% of PC and about 3 minutes to be 100% replenished. The next energy system we're going to look into is the anaerobic glycolysis or lactic acid system. This system uses stored glucose or glycogen to create energy. Again, because this system is anaerobic, it does not require oxygen to produce ATP. This means that it can be a rapid supply of energy, as this system doesn't depend on oxygen to be transported to the cell. Glycolysis is the breakdown of glucose. Glyco refers to glycogen or glucose, and lysis means breakdown. In anaerobic glycolysis, one molecule of glucose produces 2 molecules of pyruvate and 2 molecules of ATP. Byproducts of this energy system are lactic acid, hydrogen ions, and ATP. An acid is a substance that can donate hydrogen ions. Lactic acid is such a substance. When it donates a hydrogen ion, the resultant product is called the conjugate base of the acid. In this case, the conjugate base of lactic acid is lactate. When lactic acid breaks down and releases hydrogen ions, it forms lactate. The cause of fatigue in this energy system is the hydrogen ions. As hydrogen ions increase, so does the acidity of the muscle, causing enzymes to slow down. Anaerobic glycolysis has a high rate of ATP production, but longer chemical reactions when compared to the ATP-PC system. In high intensity exercise, or at about 85% of heart rate maximum, lasting 5 to 60 seconds, the anaerobic glycolysis system will predominate energy production. It has the advantage of resynthesizing ATP quickly, but a disadvantage in that it produces hydrogen ions that cause fatigue. This recovery process also requires oxygen. So for athletes training this system, there needs to be substantial rest periods to allow for the byproduct to be significantly reduced or removed entirely. Both anaerobic systems will be dominant in sports that require high intensities. Sports such as a 400 meter run, 50 meter or 100 meter swim are heavily reliant on both the ATP-PC and anaerobic glycolysis systems. At the onset of exercise, it's the ATP-PC system that will use up stored energy And for high intensity exercise or exercise bouts lasting longer than 10 seconds, the anaerobic glycolysis energy system will predominate energy production. This includes repeated high intensity activity like a game of AFL, where a player may sprint for the ball or tackle an opponent, or in tennis during an intense rally with a player running back and forth with limited breaks. This takes us to the aerobic energy system. By now, hopefully you've pieced together your knowledge and discovered that aerobic means with oxygen. So this system depends on oxygen to conduct its metabolic processes. By having oxygen, there is a greater yield of ATP molecules compared to either of the anaerobic energy pathways. However, this involves more chemical reactions, thus making the system slower in its production of ATP. The aerobic energy system uses mostly carbohydrates and fats as its source of fuel. There are three main processes within this system to generate ATP: aerobic glycolysis, the Krebs cycle, and the electron transport chain. Aerobic glycolysis is the breakdown of glycogen or glucose with the presence of oxygen. It's very similar to anaerobic glycolysis in that it produces 2-ATP and 2-pyruvate, but as oxygen is present, pyruvate can be broken down later in the process instead of forming lactate. The Krebs cycle occurs within the mitochondria of the cell, where the pyruvate forms acetyl-CoA to form carbon dioxide and hydrogen, and results in the release of 2-ATP molecules. The final process of the aerobic energy system is the electron transport chain. This occurs on the inner mitochondrial membrane, where electron carriers pump hydrogen ions from the matrix to the intermembrane space. The accumulation of hydrogen ions in the intermembrane space creates an electrochemical gradient. This means that there is a greater concentration of hydrogen ions in the intermembrane space and a lower concentration in the matrix. The hydrogen ions can then passively diffuse to the matrix via transmembrane ATP synthase. Transmembrane refers to ATP synthase, the enzyme, being bound to the mitochondrial membrane instead of freely moving in the cell. As the hydrogen ions move through the ATP synthase enzymes, they trigger a phosphorylation reaction that produces 34 ATP molecules per molecule of glucose. So we get 2 molecules of ATP from glycolysis, 2 from the Krebs cycle, and 34 from the electron transport chain, adding up to a total of 38 ATP molecules for each molecule of glucose. 6 to 8 ATP molecules are used to drive this metabolic process, so there is a net total of 30 to 32 ATP. This system can produce ATP continuously for long periods of time. In fact, as long as fuel sources like glucose can be found, this system will continue to work forever. Although this system doesn't need to stop, muscle glycogen will deplete after an hour or two of exercise. This is often referred to as hitting the wall. Fortunately, we don't die after 2 hours of exercise, as the aerobic system can also use fats to produce ATP, or aerobic lipolysis. Fats require more oxygen to produce ATP and will result in a reduction in intensity. This is why glucose is a primary source of energy for exercise, as it can be broken down with or without oxygen, thus both low and high intensity training. Despite fat needing more oxygen, it actually has a higher yield of ATP than glucose, so it's our body's preferred source of energy at rest and very low intensities. Recovering this energy system is about restoring fuels to pre-exercise levels. This requires ingestion, digestion, and transportation of nutrients and can take anywhere between 12 and 48 hours, depending on the duration and intensity of the exercise. The aerobic system is the dominant source of ATP production for any exercise, sport, or activity that lasts longer than 3 minutes. This includes a game of netball, AFL, endurance sports like running a marathon, cycling, and so on. Note that I used AFL as an example in both anaerobic glycolysis and aerobic glycolysis. This is because a sport like AFL has intermittent bouts of intense exercise. So in those movements specifically, the anaerobic energy systems will predominate energy production. However, over the course of a game of AFL, lasting about 2 hours, the aerobic system is providing the most ATP. It's important to remember that the three energy systems I've mentioned are not in isolation from each other, but they all are used together to produce ATP. Like the sports I've just mentioned, there are particular times in sports where a player requires a rapid source of energy, and so the relative contribution of anaerobic energy production will increase. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen to this episode. Hopefully you found this information useful, and perhaps we'll see you for a program at BioLab.